Shalom and welcome again to Seekers of Meaning, the podcast TV arm of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Edgers. Thank you very, very much for joining us. As you know, our podcasts are designed to explore issues that affect ourselves and our families and our community in our lives served in four stages. And we thank you for joining us. We're going to be talking about today something that is extremely important. And as we enter the Passover season, the topic of a conversation around the Seder table as we talk to our relatives, our friends, our families, and talk about care plans, our own wishes and desires. We're going to be talking, and we welcome Dr. Liz Etkin Kramer, the founder and board member of Yodea. We'll get to that in a minute. And my colleague, Rabbi Peter Kazin, also a board member of Yodea. We welcome you both to something very, very, please, a very, very important and timely conversation. So thank you for joining us. And let me get right to the heart of the matter. Dr. Etkin Kramer, thank you for joining us as the founder of Yodea. Just walk me through very quickly, in case there may be one or two people in the audience who are watching or listening, don't know what Yodea is, not the literal translation, but what's the organization?
Actually, as you know better than I do, Rabbi, Yodea means to know. And we started Yodea a handful of years ago when we saw that Ashkenazi Jewish men and women are much more likely to carry a genetic mutation on the BRCA genes, much more likely than general population. In fact, it's 1 in 40 Ashkenazi Jews that carries a genetic mutation. And what happens is, and these genes have been identified, they were probably identified in 1996 and 1995. And the literature over time kept on showing that Jewish men and women, initially women, were more likely to carry this, initially with breast cancer and now in general population. And then the data showed in about 214 that you don't need a family history. In fact, the more people, if you don't select them out for family history in the Jewish population, will carry a BRCA genetic mutation than people who have a family history of cancer. So it's been quite clear from the data going on and over time that BRCA genetic mutations and the associated increased risk of cancer is more prevalent, more common in the Ashkenazi Jewish community, regardless of your family history. So in about 2018-2019, the National Comprehensive Cancer Network changed their guidelines to consider testing for all Ashkenazi Jews, regardless of family history, if they have one of four Ashkenazi Jewish grandparents. So we're trying to get the word out about BRCA genetic mutations. We're trying to make it easy for anyone to get tested. In particular, there's this markedly increased risk of cancer that could be prevented. In women, we see breast cancer and ovarian cancer as the predominant cancers. Breast cancer, we have screening for. We have mammograms. So we can pick it up earlier, but it's not sufficient for those who carry a BRCA mutation. Women who carry a BRCA mutation should have MRIs as well as mammograms because it's much more sensitive, and they can even go on medicines to prevent breast cancer. The issue comes in, even separate from breast cancer in women, is the risk of ovarian cancer. And 40% of ovarian cancers in Ashkenazi Jewish women are related to BRCA. Ovarian cancer is a battle. And I would love, as a gynecologist, I would love to make sure that my patients don't develop ovarian cancer. I just don't have any screening tests for it. So I need to know who's at risk so I can prevent ovarian cancer.
Okay. So the focus is not only then to raise awareness, but to educate the Jewish population, especially Ashkenazi descendants, about the need to get tested, genetic testing. So Peter was a board member of Yodea, with several other colleagues too, the rabbinic advisory group. how do you begin to break down the barriers and get this issue into congregational light? I mean, it's a daunting task. First of all, there's probably an element of fear about getting tested for a genetic disease. I don't want to know. It's better that I don't know. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so you're right. I think when it comes to the BRCA mutations, especially for Ashkenazic Jewish men, there is a fear factor, but there's also the ignorance factor. You know, you hear BRCA, it means breast cancer. And so men think it's only for women. And I think that's been the hardest piece of information to get out into men's minds, even into women's minds. I think most women think it only applies to them. So for me, the hardest task when it comes to the BRCA mutations is getting it into someone's mind and to accept it as a potential reality for them. I talk about it whenever I can, when I know I'm with the Jewish men. As you know, at the last Not War convention, Dr. Etkin Kramer and our team came up and did some not only talk to the group, but they arrange for people to have testing. It's a very simple thing. You just have to go on the website, sign up. You get a little box in the mail a few weeks later. It's a spit test, so it's done through DNA. You spit into the little plastic jar, you cap it, you shake it, you put it back in the box and send it off. And they got a very good price for us. So it's a reduced price. And it makes it very, very simple. I can tell you, in my case, Sheila got tested as part of a national study many years ago. She was tested at Einstein Hospital in the Bronx. And I got tested a few years later when I met Dr. Etkin Kramer. We met through a mutual friend, Dr. Adele Schneider, who was the director of the Victor Center, which is one of the organizations that came about in Philadelphia, and now they've spread out, that dealt with Jewish genetic testing on campus. She put the two of us together. I've continued that. I put Dr. Etkin Kramer in touch with another OBGYN who specialized in oncology that I knew in New York City. There's a lot of networking that goes on in this family of ours. So I would say the most important thing we can do, whether it's from a medical point of view or a rabbinic point of view, is continue to talk about this whenever you have the opportunity. I can tell you here in Sarasota, at Sarasota Memorial Hospital, they have a wonderful genetic counselor. Her specialty is oncology. And I've never heard her talk about the BRCA mutations. It's oncology in as a broad scope, but not for the Ashkenazic Jews who live here. So one of my goals this year is to bring that into Sarasota Memorial Hospital as a regular part of what they do.
So the website, from what I'm hearing, and it's important for people to understand that, I can go to the website. The name of the website is what?
Yodea.org.
Yodea.
Y-O-D-E-A-H, which means to know, .org.
.org. I can go to Yodea.org, and there's an instruction to order the test, correct?
Correct. And there are videos, there's information because you want to know what you're doing. Then there is a page on before you test, and after you test. You order your test. There is a code called KNOW30, K-N-O-W-30, which drops the price down to $99. And this is a commercial grade test. We don't have any relationship, financial or otherwise, with this lab. It's just a great lab that has agreed to give it to me for a discounted rate, and it enables me to do it through the website, because rather than sit down with a genetic counselor beforehand, because that creates all sorts of barriers.
Okay, so I sort of make sure the people I go. It's going to cost me $99
with the code KNOW30, KNOW30, one word. You go through it, you get your test in the mail, it gets mailed to you, you spit in your vial, it goes back to them, and within 3 weeks, you get your results sent to you. And included in that $99, they may increase the price to $149. Right now, we're still below the radar screen at $99, which I'm cool with. Included in that is post-test genetic counseling. So if there's a conversation you need to have with a genetic counselor, it's included.
When I'm working with people who are getting tested, if I talk to somebody and convince them to go on the ODEA website and to get tested, now I tell them that they will get their results back and they will be able to talk to a genetic counselor if need be, because there's no reason to talk to a genetic counselor if you come up and you're not a carrier of the BRCA mutation. But if you are, then a whole host of things open up in terms of what do I do? And you need a genetic counselor because they are the professionals that deal with this. But I go a step further. And so you had asked the question earlier, what do you do with older people, older men especially? If I send somebody onto the website, I tell them that if you get back the results that you are positive for the BRCA mutations, you're going to have a genetic counselor to talk with, but you're also going to have me. Because we human beings are two parts. We are the goof, the physical body, and we are the nephesh, the soul that God breathed into Adam in the story in Genesis chapter 2, verse 7. You're a whole person. And a whole person cannot just do this with a genetic counselor, at least in my mind. They need a rabbi to be there for the spiritual part, because the questions are incredibly difficult. What do I do? I mean, a lot of it's based on age. If you have a person in their late 80s or 90s who decides to get tested because they want to make sure their children and grandchildren are okay, and they find out they're positive, are you going to do surgery on a person of that age? Prophylactic surgery, because a lot of the surgery that's done, especially in younger people who find out that they're positive, is surgery, hysterectomy, surgical removal of the breasts, and maybe including reconstruction. But the point is, women, young women especially, have tremendous decisions that they have to make in order to save their lives, because you just don't want to be told, okay, you're positive for the BRCA1 mutation, and you're not going to do anything. I mean, that is really like opening your arms to the end. So I think Rabbi Dr. Edwin Kramer can tell you that there are these incredible stories of what I consider to be heroic young women who have taken the bull by the horns and done what they had to do. They never thought about it growing up, that this would ever be their reality. But there's a different reality, I think, for older people, especially, I think, for older men. Men don't think of themselves as getting breast cancer. They know about pancreatic cancer, but they don't realize that if they have the BRCA2 mutation, that the pancreatic cancer might be more threatening to them than just being a man.
And the beauty of knowing is that there are things, even with pancreatic cancer, that you can do about it. And not to remove from the spiritual world, but from a medical standpoint, we now have pancreatic cancer screening that picks up pancreatic cancer 90% of the time where it's surgically resectable. But if you don't have that ability to know, you don't know, and you can't do the screening. So it's truly life-saving. The genetic test that's done includes BRCAs, both BRCA genes, and it's not just the founder mutations, the genes that are more common in Ashkenazi Jews. It's all of the BRCA mutation. I don't want to talk about BRCA anymore. I've lost too many patients to cancers that could have been prevented. There was a good friend of mine who started the 1 in 40 nonprofit, Lauren Corduck. She passed away from metastatic ovarian cancer. And she said to me once, I cannot believe I could have prevented this. It breaks my heart. And those are the horrible stories that I have to I want to avoid. I don't want to see that. So, but there are things that you can, and it's a hard decision. It's a hard thing, but it's life-saving. And as time goes on, we're getting more data on it. We're getting more research. We're looking at prevention, chemo prevention for breast cancer. How wonderful is that? So it's really important. We talk also in terms of the risk of breast cancer, but every person, male or female, has a risk of breast cancer. So it's risk reduction in the sense that if you don't carry the BRCA mutation, your risk goes down to general population risk, which is actually breast cancer is the most common cancer we see. So you still need to be followed. Or if you have a family history, you still may need MRIs or you still may consider going on medicines. But the point of the matter is it's all about how to manage your risk from a medical standpoint.
So this is a, I always tell classes when I go out and we do workshops for my program about, rituals and prayers. We do a lot of that. And I said, if I was ever to write a prayer book, and the odds of that happening are zero. Right in the first page, it would be a blessing for medical technology. Because of medical technology, as we all know, there are people walking around now playing golf or on a cruise that 5-10 years ago, they would have been dead. So this is, and the reason this works out, I mean, the spiritual and the physical, the body and soul, Judaism medically is a holistic medical system. It understood the interconnection between the mind and the body and the soul. How now, given what you're talking about, given the prevalence of this, given the reality of these tests that are, as you would say, doctor, life-saving, and influence from generation to generation, how does Yodea get this information out to the Jewish community of the United States of America? We'll leave the world in another time, but just to the U.S. How are you doing that?
We're doing the best we can. Peter is getting out to the Jewish community. The guidelines have changed to include Ashkenazi Jewish, so I'm very comfortable about educating physicians about the importance of looking at ethnicity in terms of risk of carrying hereditary cancer genetic mutation. We're doing everything we possibly can. We're contacting any Jewish agency that we can. The interesting thing about it is look at the example that we did in the Jewish community in the 1970s for Tay-Sachs. Tay-Sachs is not in the Jewish community the way it is at all anymore. In fact, it's more common in the Black community because you wouldn't expect to see it. And Ashkenazi Jews know ahead of time this is something that they need to test for. Interestingly, so I had a conversation with a very a brilliant researcher who does a lot of the genetic testing. She's a physician, and she's done tons of studies on BRCA, and she runs a fantastic center on BRCA. And she said to me, because this is before the guidelines change, and I said, we got to get out there. We've got to test all these people. People are being diagnosed with cancer. We've got to prevent cancer. And she said to me, but most Jews, I'm told, she's not Jewish, most Jews, I'm told, don't go to temple anymore. So what are you going to do? How are you going to get it out to them? And I said, yes, but most Jews have a Jewish mother. Okay, so if I don't go to temple, okay, but I have a Jewish mother who's going to make sure that I get tested. Or if I'm not tested, at least the mom and dad are tested, because it's what's called autosomal dominant. So if the mom is negative and the dad is negative, compared to Tay-Sachs and such, then the chance of the child having this mutation on one of the BRCA genes is 0.3%. So it's extraordinarily unlikely. It's not zero, but it's very unlikely. So I feel so much better that I've got somebody at a relatively average risk for ovarian cancer and breast cancer.
So let me try to add to the answer. So years ago, in the in the 1970s, 1975 to be exact, when the Central Conference of American Rabbis passed a resolution. They called it Jewish genetic disease, but there was only one. It was Tay-Sachs. And they urged rabbis in their premarital counseling to urge these couples to be tested, but there was only the test for the one. In 2006, I spearheaded a resolution for the Central Conference of American Rabbis and also for the Union of American Hebrew Congregations, a joint resolution on testing for Jewish genetic diseases. And there were only a handful at that time, maybe five or six that we knew of. It had grown from one. I've now just been reappointed to the Resolutions Committee of the Central Conference. And one of my goals is to take the 2006 resolution, which was fine in 2006, but today is ancient, and to redo it so that it brings it into the really into the 21st century. So Dr. Etkin Kramer is one of a group of Jewish genetic disease specialists that I have contacted. I've sent them the resolution. I've asked each one of them from their perspective to update it and to get the information to me. It will then go to the Resolutions Committee and eventually to the conference's board. So we'll at least have a resolution in 2024, 2025 that will make sense, because nobody ever heard of BRCA mutations in 2006. They were not on our plate. They were there, but we didn't know about them. So I'm hoping that that Reform rabbis will now be armed with the relevant information and get it to their congregations. You can only hope that they will do it.
Let me follow up with that. So we're all familiar with the CCAR, the Reform Rabbinate, but have you begun outreach into the conservative seminaries, the Reconstructionist seminaries, the renewal seminaries, the independent seminaries? Because the training of the future rabbis, if they understand it before they even go out into the field, how much the more so are they able to spread the word?
The answer is yes, but it's ancient history, because I was the rabbinic advisor to the Jewish Genetic Disease Consortium, which was a very important organization. It sort of has reached old age. It still exists, but it doesn't do what it used to do. But we, in those days, We went into HUC on all three campuses in the States, the JTS. We went to American Academy in LA. And so we did teaching to rabbinic students. The problem is that that kind of teaching has not been done since probably 2010, 2011. It's unfortunate. But it just, you know, I retired and I have limited ability to do it on my own. It may be that Judea will want to be one of the organizations that picks up the ball and provides. You have to have someone who's willing to schlep, who understands how to teach this information. You have to have some money available for transportation, housing, etc. Since I retired, although I work as a volunteer for a lot of these organizations, as I've gotten older, I just haven't gone as many places as I used to go.
So let me follow up with something that you alluded to, but it's really, I think, crucial, especially for clergy who may be watching or listening to this, and clergy in training, and that is the pastoral counseling component. Rabbis, cantors, etc., counsel, do premarital counseling, kids getting married for the first time. And the trend to older in the Jewish community is most of our young people get married not at 20 and 21, but much later. In the premarital counseling, how do we begin to introduce this? Because this may be frightening to a 28-year-old saying, before I agree to do your wedding, you have to agree, because I've done this with couples, you have to agree to have these tests to make sure, you know, in the future, your children, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And follow up to that, when we deal with subsequent marriages, people coming to you perhaps in their 50s or 60s for second or third marriages for a variety of reasons, is it not equally important for them to get tested?
Okay, so it's really a multiple part answer. Let me begin with the younger people, because I still do weddings. Since the 1975, when I learned about Tay-Sachs and the conference took a position, I refused to do a wedding couple unless they were tested, counseling and testing. And I included in my premarital counselings multiple sessions on Jewish genetic disease. And of course, as the number of diseases grew, it was a longer conversation. I can tell you that since I began that in 1975 through 2023, I only had two couples who refused to be tested. I cannot understand why they refused. I guess they didn't like the fact that I was making the rule, and I don't know who did their wedding. I can tell you of the two, I know that one of them gave birth to a child with Tay-Sachs. Yes, I know that for a fact. The other one I lost touch with, and I have no idea what's happened in their family. So I'm very hard-nosed about this, and I will tell you, when I do training of rabbis, and I used to go around and teach boards of rabbis all over the country, when they had their, you know, their monthly meeting, I would be there. And after I taught them, and I included this, by the way, when I taught at HUC and JTS, I would say to them, now you know all the information. There should be no more questions in your mind that this is important. If you are marrying a couple and you do not insist that they get tested, and one day they give birth to a child with one of these terrible diseases, and they decide they're going to sue you, and I find out about it, I will serve as a witness for them in that lawsuit. Because if you're a rabbi or a cantor and you have that information in your hand and you don't use it, I think you're liable. I think you have made a terrible, terrible error in judgment. We would say on Yom Kippur, they missed the mark. Al-Chait, I missed the mark and a couple has suffered. So I take it very, very seriously. Now, to answer your question about older couples in the second or third marriage, it's very doubtful that they're going to become procreators. They probably already have. So what I do with them is I do the same kind of counseling, but on the basis of, number one, you need to get tested if you haven't been tested. Even if it's being tested for the normal panel, it's hard. They may not get insurance, but they should do it because they may have grandchildren, and their grandchildren have a right to know if they're, you know, in jeopardy. But definitely make them get tested for the BRCA1 and 2 mutations. I use the same premise. If you don't get tested for yourself for this one panel, then I won't do your wedding. I'm just as hard-nosed about BRCA as I am about the autosomal recessives, you know, because they all are potentially death threats.
Right.
And I don't understand people not taking it seriously.
So the concept of pikuach nefesh, or the saving of a life, is really at the heart, you know, bottom line, it's really at the heart of this enterprise. So before we run out of time, I just want to return. Doctor, the word cancer, I'm sure you see this all the time in your office. Every rabbi has had these conversations with somebody who walks into our office and say, you know, Rabbi Katz, I need to talk to you. I've just gotten this diagnosis. I'm scared that it's just cancer in the year 2024, doctor, a death sentence automatically.
Absolutely not. And it depends upon the type of cancer, especially a screenable cancer or a preventable cancer. Like breast cancer, the 5-year survivable is north of 90-some-odd percent. So because of screening, And in essence, checking for these genetic mutations is a little bit like screening in the sense that you can manage them differently. And do different investigation, so you can try to catch things early. So there, in terms of cancer prevention or cancer management, the two ways to look at it is really one, prevention, meaning not getting it or decreasing the risk of it, or two, catching it early, for lack of a better term. And that's a big thing nowadays with dense breasts and trying to do additional screening besides the plain old mammogram, which is important too. You know, it's all about the risk assessment. And it's so many things. And, you know, it's interesting because the word cancer, I say the word literally 30 times a day and it flows off my mouth at this point. But you have to take a step back and remember, this is not something that, it's a shocking word to most people. And I get it. I totally get it. So to live in the prevention world, which is where I want to live, is all about preventing cancer. It's keeping someone healthy and making sure that they avoid a high chance of developing things. And we have the ability, we have the power to do it many times. Not always, but let's control what we can. We can do this. We can do this. We can prevent this in future generations by doing in vitro fertilization and selecting out an embryo that doesn't carry one of these hereditary cancer genetic mutations.
And that technology exists, right?
Nowadays, absolutely. Absolutely. And people on my website, one of the rabbis that we work with, Lila Haas, is a rabbi who talks all about that. She carries a BRCA mutation. Peter, Rabbi Kasdan, knows her. And she talks all about the importance and the how Judaism, again, you guys can speak better than I can about this, but how Judaism values that knowledge in terms of preventing illness and saving lives.
No. The health and wellness text, this is part of one of the workshops we do, about in Judaism as voluminous, and it really speaks to exactly what you're talking about. And so I just got to ask you this one last question before we have to end. Because you talk about prevention, living in the land of prevention. And since we're in America and everybody takes their truth for one of these things, talk to me just the idea of preventing cancer by lifestyle changes. If I eat nuts, fish, work out 20 hours a day, I can prevent it just by how I live. There's an element of truth in that.
1,000%.
But what's the but? What's the but?
So the amount, so things like smoking or alcohol itself increases the risk of breast cancer. And we don't know how much alcohol is safe. For about 20 years, we were saying, oh, a glass of wine or two, that's good for the heart. It's actually fallen out of favor. The pendulum has swung, and we no longer believe that's a safe thing to do. Making sure that your weight is in the normal range. Weight creates inflammatory factors, and weight in women will increase the risk of breast and uterine cancer. So there are a lot of things that you can do. The amount of exercise, who thought exercise, physical activity can decrease the risk of breast cancer. So, but the degrees, for example, if you carry a BRCA mutation and you exercise all you can, it doesn't mean that your lifetime risk is 70%. If you drop it to 68%, great, but you need to do other things to manage your risk. And that's really important to do. It's all together.
So thank you very, very much for this. It's a tremendous amount of information. But the bottom line is technology exists to help you save your life. And by implication and by extension, perhaps the lives of those who come after us. And so if the technology exists, that's why the brothel for technology, then really we need to make sure that more and more and more people understand it, can access it, which in our country is an issue, And again, the website is real fast. The website is
Yodea.org. They're doing this in other countries. We should be doing this in the United States. In Israel, it's done. In the United Kingdom, it's done as part of the national health system. We can do this. We may have to do this as a community, and that's okay because we take care of each other. That's what we do. And we do it as a community, not only for the Jewish community, but it's for Tikkun Olam. We do it for other communities too. Let's do it. Let's prevent cancer. We can do it.
Dr. Liz Atkin Kramer, the founder and board member of Yodea, Rabbi Peter Kazin, activist in this field, board member of Yodea. Thank you very, very much. Tip of the iceberg, but I hope there are people out there who heard this message and will go to the website, access that test, because you never, never know. Kvas nefesh, saving of a life. So thank you both very, very, very much.
Thank you so much, Rabbi.
Thank you very much for joining us on today's edition of Secrets of Meaning, the podcast and TV arm of Jewish Sacred Aging. If you'd like to contact us for suggestions or a possible sponsorship of some of these podcasts, just email me at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. If you'd like to make a donation to help support our work, go to the website, jewishsacredaging.com, and you'll find a conveniently located donate button. Just click on that. Follow the prompts. It's really, really easy. Secrets of Meaning is produced at the Broadcast Center of Lubetkin Media Companies in beautiful Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and a big shout out to our producer, Steve Lubet. I want to thank you again for joining us today. I hope you take to heart a lot of this information. And until we see each other again on the next Secrets of Meaning, take care, stay healthy, and be kind to one another. Shalom.